Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Happy December 24th. It's a very interesting day in history and what's going on in Washington or what went on. I don't know if our usual thing, the March to the Scaffold, is appropriate or our alternate theme, politics and poker. But anyway, let's try to celebrate what's left of the year. And at least we have roofs over our heads and food on our plate and kibble in our dogs and cats' plate. It's an interesting day. Some very famous military people were born on this day. And, of course, of interest to Catholics and people who hate the Jesuits, St. Ignatius of Loyola was born. He started as a soldier, and he brought his military skill and mentality to organizing the Society of Jesus. That's what the Jesuits are. They're also known, they're the most powerful order, religious order in the Roman Catholic Church. And the head of the order, the superior, I think it's the superior, is known as the Black Pope. Although he wears his black cassock. He doesn't wear the white skull cap or the red shoes or the white cassock. Very powerful people, and a lot of people, they control a lot of colleges, USF here in San Francisco, Loyola in New Orleans, Chicago, I think, I'm not sure about Fordham, but they're very, when you have been trained by the Jesuits, even their seminaries, your mind has really been put through basic training, as it were, in the Marine Corps, something along those lines. And even these people who have gone into politics, there's a guy on TV, worked for Nixon. He's a former Jesuit. He left the order. And I've known some Jesuits who taught at college. They left the order, left the religious order, and even got married, several of them. But be that, so that's where it's at. Also today is the birthday of a little-known Roman emperor who was reigned about 6 months, Galba. His name comes up if you've seen the film The Fall of the Roman Empire, based on Samuel Bronstein's, one of his epics, and we're still waiting for another epic to come out of Hollywood, one on my favorite character, Garibaldi. One day we'll get into his history, and he's fought in the American Civil War. He's a very interesting guy, and he united the Italian states and helped purge Italy, roust the Austrians. Fascinating guy. It's also the birthday of one of my ancestors, Kit Carson, General George Patton I. And interestingly, his grandson, George Patton IV, died on this day, December 24th. Now we come to some very controversial politicians and birthdays. Hamid Karzai was born today in Afghanistan, and of course, those of you, we still have it in archives. I would recommend that you go to archives and you can pull down and listen to Brigadier Francis Ingle, who the last of the Bengal Lancers, who served in the Northwest Frontier, Pakistan and India, and in World War II also. He was out there for 30 years, and I don't think Britain or any of our American military people have the experience, the knowledge, and the understanding of that region that he had. Of course, nobody's been there 30 years like he was. It's also the birthday of King John, the brother of Richard the Lionhearted. And those of you who've seen the Robin Hood films, and King John's always plotting Prince John was always plotting to get rid of his brother Richard, who was off fighting the wars. The Lion in Winter is a great film which shows there were three brothers, and it shows the manipulation of what a shady character John was, Prince John. And, of course, that movie was with Peter O'Toole, who played Henry, the Plantagenet, descendant of William the Conqueror, or William the Bastard, as the English Saxons called him, and Catherine Hepburn, one of the best films ever made, and it's one I would take to a desert island. Among the deaths on this date, composers and musicians, was Alban Berg, who came up with this weird music system when I was in music school. I had to study it, but I never understood it. And then we have Oscar Peterson, who was a black Canadian, and his name came up in the voter fraud investigation here in San Francisco about 10 years ago. They listed him as living at the Bank of America headquarters, and of course, when we called up, when Californians Against Voter Fraud, a group that I'm with and helped start, when we checked with the Bank of America people over there, someone said, that cat don't blow his horn here. So that's another interesting little tidbit about vote fraud. Then the great movie composer, or two of them today, Bernard Herrmann, who wrote many of the scores for Alfred Hitchcock's films, and also Franz Waxman, another one. And he did Song of Bernadette, the film with Jennifer Jones, and she recently died this week. She lived a long time. And then Rosani Brazzi, he didn't sing, but they used him in the movie South Pacific, which came out in the late 50s. And let's see who else today. And then one of the greatest singers, so she was born today, Teresa Stritch Randall, great opera singer. And then we have the Cardinal, it's Indian, interesting man, an Indian from India, who was born today, and he was the Cardinal Archbishop of Bombay, which is now Mumbai. I don't know where he was when that attack of the terrorists occurred in Bombay or Mumbai last Christmas season. And then among the other deaths today was Vasco da Gama, the one of the great Portuguese explorers. And then John Hopkins, those of you who are interested in medicine and research, he's the founder of John Hopkins Hospital, I think in Baltimore. Then we had the great historian, Samuel Huntington. And, of course, a member of, Frank Sinatra's Rat Pack, Peter Lawford, who was also married to one of the Kennedys, and the great Japanese actor, Toshiro Mifune. He died today. And then we have John Muir, great high priest or philosopher of the environmental movement, and then Norman Vincent Peale, who wrote the book Positive Power of Positive Thinking. Shut up. And then today, in among the events, Enrico Caruso, who gave his last performance in 1920, and then he went back to Italy, and I think he died shortly. Then among the inventions today, patent, was Irving Fisher. He designed the system used in archiving using index cards. And then in 1941, shortly after their fleet escaped detection, after they bombed the sneak attack on Pearl Harbor, Admiral Nagumo's fleet safely reached the security of Japan. Of course, we couldn't attack them because we didn't have the forces in the Pacific. And then in 1946, something very controversial occurred. General McNary granted amnesty to over 800,000 so-called minor Nazi officials. That's something I didn't know until I started doing some checking, and it's worth looking at. And then today, also another event, the Ku Klux Klan was founded in Tennessee, and of course, the tactics that the Ku Klux Klan used to terrorize blacks and Catholics and Jews, we're seeing some of those same tactics without the sheets being used by what I call the New Left, people like Acorn, some of these bogus phony poverty organizations. And then in Egypt on this date, Giuseppe Verdi's great opera Aida premiere to celebrate the opening of the Suez Canal, which cut the transportation shipping time. Instead of having to go around Africa, they cut that, Ferdinand de Sleps cut that canal through Egypt to the Indian Ocean. And then we have Henry Ford completed his first, I don't know how they explain this one, first useful gas engine. Then in 1906, anybody's interested in radio history, Reginald Fessenden did the first broadcast of music over the radio, and he did it in the state of Massachusetts. And let's see, I did mention we were going to have a little bit on Ian Fleming, Sean Connery, and Miss Moneypenny. And the reason I brought it up was Moneypenny, the woman who played the secretary to M, gorgeous woman, I believe she was Canadian-born, and she was she's always teasing and kind of putting the little make on Sean Connery, and he was going along with it. And her boss, M, who was played by Bernard Lee, was also always aware and had to cut it off. You know, he'd always call Moneypenny into his office. But she got only, I think it was $50,000 for all the films that she starred in and played that role. And she later was honored with a peerage, became a lady. And in her old age, she was mugged. There was an attempted mugging on the street, and she used the James Bond tactic on the muggers and kicked them in their, quote, nether regions. I think she was about 70 or a little older at the time, but she died this week. So whenever you see Miss Moneypenny, the secretary, a gorgeous woman, you can there's a little bit of history for her. Since people give panda bears for Christmas to children, I found two of the interviews that I did with what I call panda politics, or how the Chinese were using the pandas to get a more favorable image of Red China here in the United States. So I'm going to play part one of that. It's called Panda Politics, and, well, enjoy.
Hello, my friends. This is Peter Paul. Welcome to Animals and the Idea of Pandas. Westerners first discovered the panda in 1869. A Jesuit priest, Father Armand David, a missionary, found some furs while he was in China. However, it wasn't until the Stotzner expedition in 1913 did Europeans actually see a panda. The giant panda is related to the raccoon. Of course, the panda is much more lovable. Some scientists also think that it is related to a species of aberrant bear. There is also another panda called the lesser panda. Its habitat is in the Himalayas. Could this be the abominable snowman? Since pandas don't talk, I got an exclusive interview with the head of the panda delegation, Mr. Sheng Muao Sheng. Mr. Sheng is also the special consultant to the China Wildlife Association, the Conservation Association of China. These interviews were done through an interpreter, so bear with us. You waited long enough for the pandas, and it'll prove to be worth it. Welcome to San Francisco.
Thank you, I'm pleased to.
Okay, was that Cantonese or what dialect did you use?
你是讲什么？你是讲广东话呢，还是讲这个普通话？
是讲普通话。
In China, we call it's a common language for all over the country.
Okay, tell me, how do you talk? Do the keepers talk to the pandas to get them to do things?
就是说请你讲讲这个管理的熊猫应该干些什么事。我们 we have two experts to stay with panda in San Francisco room. So if you have time, they will give you some idea in detail.
Okay. What is the significance of the panda in Chinese culture? What does it represent to the Chinese people?
Everybody
knows the panda is a very important rare animal in China.
Okay. How many pandas are left in China, do you know?
现在中国还有多少只熊猫？
大约1000只左右。
Approximately 1,000.
Where do they live? Where is their habitat?
它的栖息地在哪儿？
在中国的四川。
The main habitat is Sichuan province in the south part of China.
Sichuan, is that where we get the hot food?
现在是15块南了吧？
是的。
Yes.
Okay, now the pandas don't eat hot food. What do they eat?
那么没有是竹子吃了，吃什么呢？
现在就是人工给他一些这个甘蔗、羊肉、排骨，作为这个抢救熊猫补充它的食物。
We supply by people. We send a lot of people to the mountain and supply something like sugar cane and mutton meat. And so
so the panda is kind of a gourmet, it likes good food?
那么熊猫也喜欢吃些食物吗？
喜欢的。
They can eat.
Tune in next edition for more information on the Chinese panda with the head of the panda delegation, Mr. Sheng Muao Sheng. Teddy Roosevelt, eat your heart out. This is Peter Paul for Animals and the Idea of Pandas.
And now we're going to play part two of that interview.
Hello, my friends and panda lovers. Welcome to Animals and the Idea of Pandas. Today, in part two of our exclusive interview with Mr. Shen Mao Sheng, the head of the delegation displaying the pandas at the San Francisco Zoo, I asked him more questions about the panda's behavior.
What's the lifetime of a panda? How long do they live?
熊猫能活多久？多少年？
没有，
30年。
一般在我们动物园里面养的话，最长的时间是3年。但是在野外的话，条件更恶劣，可能要碰到一些野兽啊，或者有疾病啊，得不到治疗啊，这样的话，它的死亡率就比较大，也就是20岁左右吧，20多岁。
In the zoo, the panda will live about 30 years, but in the wild, maybe shorter.
What colors are they? Just white and black?
它就是黑白的吧。
Black and white then, huh?
Black and white, yes.
Are they black-bodied and white legs sometimes, or just like this with a white body and black legs?
身上是白的，腿脚是黑的，或者也有那个身上是黑毛，腿脚是白毛。
不，就是这种颜色。
那
没有变化。
Same.
So they're black legs and white body, huh? Okay. How much do they weigh? How many kilos?
多重啊？它那个公母不一样。
Different. The male and the female is different.
How much?
多重？
熊的多重，公的多重啊？
年龄呢？
年龄不一样，体重也不一样。
You know, the age different, the weight is different.
Okay. But I mean, like, are they like a big dog or a big bear? Like 150 pounds?
也像熊啊、狗啊那样呢，是说有50公斤啊，还多少公斤啊？
大约一般是在70多公斤左右，70-80公斤左右。
Around 70 kilometers.A kilogram.
Yeah,
very small.
当然大的可能也有100公斤。
Some are over 100 kilograms.
When they have babies, how many do they have at a time? Do they have one or two or what?
一次是分娩，有一只两只。
两个。
Two. That's simple.
体重只有100克。
Okay. But the weight. It's about 100 grams. Too small.
Too small.
但是生了两个崽啊，它要吃掉它一个，只带一个。
But one baby.
或者是扔掉一个。
One baby will be alive. Another sometimes the mother, mother panda eat the baby, sometimes throw it away.
Oh, I see. Well, like other, then the panda's a mammal, is it a warm-blooded animal? It's a mammal, the panda is a mammal.
是哺乳动物，对对对对对。
Oh, it's a mammal.
Mammal.
Okay.
Mammal. Yeah.
And do you, like when pandas die, do you stuff them and keep, preserve them in zoos or anything, or museums?
Oh,
在动物园的话，它要死亡的话，一般啊？
没有，就是发什么呢？把它的皮子或者是拿下来做成标本，供教学、科研、教育儿童啊。
We don't bury
the panda body underground. We just take the panda fur and to make sample.
Okay. Thank you very much.
In our next edition of Animals and Ideas, we'll meet Dr. Noe Stroa. We'll be visiting some unusual San Francisco veterinary hospitals. Join me then at Animal Farm. It's still 1984. This is Peter Paul. The pandas thank you. Mr. Shen Mao Sheng thanks you. And as Teddy Roosevelt would say, if he's still not eating his heart out, it's been bully.
And that was the conclusion of the interviews that I did with the Chinese government veterinarians came to San Francisco to set up and monitor the panda exhibition. There were a lot of problems at the San Francisco Zoo. And it's going to be interesting with the economy in the tank. A lot of cities which still have municipal zoos, San Francisco's is an unusual one in which there's a San Francisco Zoological Society, a kind of non-profit, and that's controversial. Socialite thing. Usually with these boards of directors on these animal organizations, whether it's an SPCA or one of the pets, these animal rights organizations, you have people who are either they're activists and they know something about animals or they don't, and it's a social listing for them in the social register or whatever. It's unfortunate, but this is what happens and why these organizations get into trouble. Also, they don't integrate. Seeing that our cities are becoming more and more multicultural and multi-ethnic, and I don't believe in what I call ethnic window dressing, just putting a black or Asian or Hispanic or on a board of directors because you want to look civil and up-to-date and look good. But putting somebody on a board or getting people on a board of directors doesn't even have to be an animal organization. They should be people who know something about that particular organization, are willing to learn, are willing to give the time, and have some basic competence and ethics. Some people in one organization, animal organization here in San Francisco, they put the a guy who sold them insurance, put him on the board. And, of course, they continue to give their insurance business to this board member. Now, that's illegal, but that's one of the things that we discovered. And this goes on all the time, and this is one of the problems with the, quote, nonprofit charitable sector, whether it's a non-government, what they call NGO, or it's one with municipal state contracts. So that's something that people need to become aware of because there's less and less money and there's more and more demand for services from these groups, which often have received over the years big millions of federal and state and foundation and public money. And a lot of it can't be accounted for because they're as secret as the KGB when it comes to trying to get them to open up their books. The word transparency is meaningless, and of course it's a word that's become so overused as one of the most overused words in the American political lexicon. But people need to become aware of it, and the media people. One of the problems that I had when I was at KLW and Western Public Radio, because I had a background in the fields that I covered, I didn't go into these organizations and interview these people for a puff job or to be promoting the organization. It's not a good idea. But what media people can do and should do in their own communities, and people who support these organizations, or if they have like animal control contracts or housing contracts or AIDS organization contracts, the media people should ask for their 990s if they're 501c3 and publish what the findings and look at the background of the people on the board, the people who run the organization, and see if there are any lawsuits. And there are all kinds of scandals that are ignored by people in the media, and that's one of the reasons that the media, whether it's print, broadcast, or internet, whatever, is not trusted. You know, and it's an unfortunate that media people become part of the pitch, and they shouldn't. They should go no further, and they can do this, is to offer to tell the organization's PR people how to do a public relations release. But that's as far as they should go. They shouldn't be promoting your organization and ignoring if there's a mismanagement or theft or abuse of employees or abuse of animals or clients or non-accountability. That's going to become very important in the years to come. I don't know if I should end today's with politics and poker, which it seems to be what went on with our representatives in Washington, but I think, you know, what the heck.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
King two. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the clown?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bat out.
Politics and poker, shove them up and cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, what to bet,
when to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrays.
Bet 'em.
Little trays, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your mind.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in. Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fanyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot! That's me!
Politics and poker! Politics and poker! Play for a pot that's mediocre! Politics and poker! Rubbing neck and neck! If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck!
Well, Well, I don't know if that's your theme song in Washington this week or next week. But anyway, thank you for listening. And remember, the Saturday shows have been canceled. And tune in next Tuesday. This is Peter Paul Brizola with The Shadow.